This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. Creating your website with Squarespace is simple. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code GUARDIAN to get 10% off your first purchase. Hey, I'm Jessica Valenti, Guardian columnist, and this is What Would a Feminist Do? With the 2016 presidential election around the corner, one issue we haven't talked about on the show, but an issue that's center stage in the national conversation, is immigration reform. But in the shadow of wall building and racist rhetoric, the mainstream media misses the huge impact immigration has on women and the conversation that needs to be had about immigration as a feminist issue. More than half of the people migrating to the United States are women and children. The majority of these women, often undocumented, work in informal occupations like home health aides or childcare providers. Because of their uncertain status as citizens, they're often vulnerable to exploitation, whether that's economic exploitation or domestic violence. Today, we're going to talk about this and many other reasons why immigration is a feminist issue. I'm joined by Lorella Praeli, Hillary Clinton's Latino Outreach Director, and Miriam Young, Executive Director of the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum.
We currently live with immigration policies that are sexist.
You know, I want to make sure that kids and families are in places where they feel like they can call for help if they need help.
But first, a short rant. One of the most frustrating and really horrific things about Trump's rise to political power has been his dangerous and racist rhetoric on immigrants. He's called for banning Muslims from entering the United States and called Mexicans rapists. This on its own, obviously, is horrible enough, but something else is irking me, too, especially in light of recent allegations against Trump by women who said he harassed and sexually assaulted them. A huge part of Trump's framing around his xenophobic and racist ideas about immigrants has been this idea of protecting women, white women in particular, I should say. That's why he's brought up rape. That's why he's cynically talked at his rallies about young murder victims who are women. He wants to paint himself as a savior of women and position immigrants as a danger to us. The framing, I think, is pretty ironic, considering it looks like the most dangerous person right now to women, both on a personal and political level, is Trump himself. So please keep us out of it. We don't need your protection. We don't need your anti-immigrant racism. And keep your hands to yourself. Joining me right now is Lorella Praeli, Hillary Clinton's Latino Outreach Director, and Miriam Young, Executive Director of the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. Welcome, both of you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So just to get right into it, Miriam, your organization has a campaign called We Belong Together, and the slogan is immigration reform is central to women's equality. Why is that? Can you talk a little bit about immigration as a feminist issue?
Absolutely. So we live in a reality today where 75% of all immigrants to this country are women and children. The kind of stereotype we have of who an immigrant is from the 50s is no longer true.
Right.
Of like single men striking it out, you know, trying to make it on their own. That's not the reality. We know that immigration is at the core a feminist issue. And like any other public policy, you can reinforce sexism and you can bake in sexism, or you can use it to propel justice, right, and equality. So one of the, I think, most telling examples that I can think of is that the first ever immigration law ever passed is actually the Page Law of 1857. Mm. And it was written to expressly prohibit Chinese women from coming to this country. Chinese men.
Women in particular.
Women.
Yeah.
And it did so by labeling them as immoral and labeling them as prostitutes. But essentially what that policy did was say, those families are not worthy. They cannot be created here. We will control the entry of women's bodies, right, to prevent certain types of families and communities from flourishing. So immigration has always been a tool about controlling bodies, and women and women's wombs have always been central to that. I think that's a little bit of a core of it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Lorella, I wonder if you.
Yeah, if you could speak to that as well.
You know, I'm a huge fan of the We Belong Together campaign and Ai-Jen Po's work and the work that so many immigrant women across the country have led for years. I am the daughter of an immigrant woman. I'm an immigrant woman myself. But I rest on the shoulders of my mother and the sacrifices that she made. And just like Chela, there are countless other Latinas and immigrant women who sacrifice so much, including their health, right? So, I mean, I think it's a combination of seeing immigrant women as the backbone to our economy and certain economies more than others. And then also seeing them not have access to, you know, basic rights, workers' comps, certain protections in the workplace, healthcare, and, you know, the list goes on. And so I think as we look to address our broken immigration system, we have to look at it from that perspective of the immigrant woman, from that lens of, you know, how is their life different? How are their lives different? What are the issues that we need to address by looking at it from that lens and that perspective.
Absolutely. And I would love to hear from both of you what you think is at stake in this election for immigrants and for undocumented women in particular.
I think there's a tremendous amount at stake for all women. And immigration policies do affect all women. We currently live with immigration policies that are sexist. The immigration enforcement policy, which is favored right now by anti-immigrant forces, you know, this whole rhetoric about strengthen the borders,
right,
build the
right.
wall and all that. What's not told is the impact on, for instance, survivors of violence and domestic violence. So in households where you may have mixed status, where a woman is undocumented and their husband is not, that's an extreme power difference to begin with. You mix into that the fact that local law enforcement then is deputized to be immigration. And what you have is this bind that you will put women and survivors in. If they are getting beat or their life is in danger, do they call the police to get safe, but risk deportation and breaking their family up? It's a choice no woman should make, and certainly not a choice that the feminist movement fought so hard for violence against women policies to have, right? So the fact that immigrant women and immigrant policies are being used to undermine such a central feminist policy and win,
mm-hmm.
It's rolling back. It's rolling back the clocks. And we
Absolutely.
Need to be able to fix that.
Lorella, what about you? What do you think is at stake this election?
I think everything is at stake in this election. I mean, it's everything from the type of policies and the future that we're going to build down to, you know, the very basic conversation about who we are and who's considered an American and who's embraced and who's rejected in our country. And I think that is what's so different about this election, I think, than previous elections. You know, I think in addition to what's been mentioned and shared, I think for immigrant women and for the immigration issue as a whole, this election is so important when we think about our future and when we think about whether or not we keep families together or families are separated. When you have, you know, our opposition and Donald Trump saying that he's going to have a massive deportation force throughout the United States, that sends a message to people that they should mm-hmm. be hiding and live in fear and secrecy. And it adds another layer of stress. And some people don't take that seriously. But, you know, we're running against a candidate that has not only promised that, has also promised to end birthright citizenship. If you are born in the United States, but are, you know, the son or daughter of an undocumented immigrant. And so everything from the actual policies to the way that we talk about immigrants and the type of image that he has painted throughout this election is what's so dangerous, right? And so every time that he's had an opportunity to talk about this issue, he has put on stage people that have lost someone they loved because of someone else's behavior or an accident. And I think that is what's still dangerous, because if you don't personally know an undocumented immigrant and that's the image that Donald Trump is painting, then that's what you assume this community to be. And it couldn't be farther away from the truth.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
Squarespace. This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. Whether the story behind your passion is out of the ordinary or simply out of this world, you should tell it in an unforgettable way. Squarespace helps you do just that, with the only websites designed to showcase what makes your passion worth pursuing. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Today, we're talking about immigration as a feminist issue. So, Miriam, you touched on this a little bit, that for years, the rhetoric around immigrant women's bodies and reproduction has been sort of framing their bodies as a national security threat, mm-hmm. right? I'm thinking about the racist term anchor babies and mm-hmm. how that's still thrown around. Do you see any progress on this front? Or do you still feel like that's like a core problem going on?
I think it's absolutely a core problem. And what we're seeing are ever more creative ways that line of thinking gets expressed. And it's fueled by, I would say, three kind of huge myths, right, mm-hmm. That are racialized. One, there's the myth that immigrant women are these quote-unquote illegal invaders, so to speak, right, mm-hmm. who come in and drop a baby, right, like
right.
as if they were bombs, you know,
right.
as a way to get a foothold in this country. The other nasty rhetoric is anti-Asian racism, which says that we're going to lose to Asian American women by subversion, right, because Asian Americans are sneaky and inscrutable. Mm. So what they do is every now and then you get these kind of rare but then exploded out stories of maternity tourism wards, right? And all these women gaming the system mm-hmm. to get citizenship. All of these stories, of course, fuel the effort to end the 14th Amendment right of birthright citizenship. The third major rhetoric, of course, is around terrorists, right? Particularly
yep.
around South Asian, Muslim, Arab American women and their reproductive choices getting looked at. And this fear that women are going to come and breed terrorists on the ground that, become explosive Skittles, right? Like is
right.
is the fear. So I think it is getting worse. And part of me is almost hopeful because
right.
now it's kind of open in the open.
The wound has been brought to the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a way we can address some of this more head on because we can see it so visibly.
I would just add that I also feel that there's now a movement that didn't really exist before. And so I think you've seen the evolution of, an immigrant rights movement that started with Dreamers, but that I think in the last go around for comprehensive immigration reform and the executive actions on immigration, you saw immigrant women at the forefront of that movement and of the conversation and the debate. Right, you had Dreamers moms organizing in Virginia and Florida and other parts of the country, in California, in Arizona, wanting to take this fight head on and them wanting to be their own protagonists in this story. And so I think that the time of fear and sort of secrecy mm-hmm. and living in the shadows, I think a lot of immigrant women are stepping up and saying, it's our country and it's our future. And I'm a taxpayer. I've been here. I've raised my kids here. And I want an opportunity to come forward and contribute in even greater ways. And so I'm optimistic.
I'm glad that you're optimistic. That makes me happy. Tell me if you think I'm wrong, but it also seems to me that a lot of the conversations that are happening are very youth-led.
I come from the immigrant youth movement, from the Dreamer movement, and, I think it was youth-led in that so much has changed in the undocumented space, where we spend so much of our time hiding and thinking about how to justify our presence in the United States and how to keep ourselves and our families safe, To then sort of realizing that in order for policy to change and in order for culture to change, we had to tell our stories. And how do we bring back the humanity that so many people have tried to take away from our parents? Because at the end of the day, they sacrificed. They had the courage to leave the comforts of their language and the comforts of their culture and home to bring us to the United States so that, you know, for me as a Latina who I lost my leg when I was 2.5, I think so much of the vision that my mother had for me to grow up in the United States wasn't just for prosthetic legs, but it was about growing up in a country where I could grow up to be anything. Right. And where my physical difference and my disability wouldn't stop me from achieving anything. Right. So she had that vision and she had that courage. And so I think us as dreamers and as young people leading movements, the conversation became about how do we expand it so that, you know, we're telling their story, and actually how do we expand it so that they themselves are telling their own story of courage and fight and lucha in the United States.
Yeah. My family and I came to this country too, and you know, I don't know if my parents would ever use the word feminist, but they, I think, came with a deep desire that I have as many opportunities as I could. And you know, maybe if they spoke better English, they wouldn't be able to use that terminology. There is an enormous amount of hope, and I feel like what's happened in the immigrant rights organizing movement is what we're seeing around social justice issues writ large, which is youth-led, lots of queer voices in the center and taking up leadership, and also extremely intersectional, right? So, yes, I do think the immigrant rights movement is youth-led, and that's awesome, and there's lots of queer voices. But it's also a perspective that none of these issues are siloed and singular, that all of us are whole people, and that our destinies are tied up in one another. And with that framework, it's allowed more women leaders to step up. You know, the We Belong Together campaign, we named it not only because there's a handy song that goes with it, so it sticks in your head, and not only because we were trying to shift the framework of the immigrant rights movement from being about, you know, fairness and rights, but to this family, like who belongs together? Family belongs together. We shouldn't be separating families. But the third reason is that as feminists, we belong together, that women of all stripes belong together in this really fundamental fight, really fundamental feminist fight, right, for our future.
So assuming Hillary Clinton wins, which thankfully it's looking more and more like that's going to be the case, which helps with my anxiety a tremendous amount. I'm wondering what, for both of you, your sort of wish list is, your feminist wish list for a Hillary Clinton presidency. Like, what would you like to see happen? Miriam, maybe we can start with you.
I think we could do a big thing. I mean, 100 days. Wouldn't it be amazing if we had a big feminist thing every day for 100 days?
I'm down for it.
Right? So, for immigrant rights, for one of our big asks at NAPOF, because we know that the majority of those stuck in the family visa backlog are actually Asian family members, is that one thing President Clinton could do is open up those visa categories so that more of our family members could reunite and join us in this country. And the majority of those waiting are actually also women. That's one. But I have so many.
Lorella, what about you?
I like the 100 days idea. we've also committed to introducing comprehensive immigration reform in the first 100 days and making the largest investment in jobs in the economy since World War II. And she's been talking about her infrastructure bill. And I think all of those should have, you know, a feminist lens. You know, I want to make sure that kids and families are in places where they feel like they can call for help if they need help. You know, where a woman feels like she can walk in to get appropriate screening if she needs a screening. And where kids aren't growing up with their parents saying, hey, here is the number. This is el número de tu tía. This is the number for your uncle or your aunt if the migra comes, if immigration comes. We are, I think, facing the most critical and most important election of our lifetime.
Is there anything that you feel is missing from the conversation about immigration and women that deserves more attention?
Yeah, I would add, you know, another thing that can happen very quickly in a next administration is the elimination of the Hyde Amendment. Why I say this affects immigrant women is that obviously abortion rights and immigration are the two most toxic third rails mm-hmm. in politics, right? Like you saw that in the Affordable Care Act fight. Both things got thrown under the bus the very first, mm-hmm. right? And were used to wedge each other. But secondly, and on the point to Lorella about culture change, we have this awful narrative and cultural belief that some folks are deserving and others aren't, that poor women are poor because they made themselves poor, not because of circumstance or luck or structural inequities. If we are successful in really supporting the queer, poor women of color who are at the lead of this campaign to eliminate the Hyde Amendment, it would be transformational. And we would be transforming what our country thinks about public benefits. And when we support each other, we all do better.
Yeah, and I think that on that note, on the power of women coming together, I would be remiss if I left this podcast and didn't say that our voices are so important. And for all of those who are hearing this, if you're in a battleground state or wherever you are in this country, it's so important that you make your voices heard, and that you value what a privilege it is to be able to vote. And that while there are so many of us that have that right to vote, there are 11 million people who are counting on us to vote with them in mind and on their behalf on election day or during early vote. And so that's my ask to people out there. And it's so important that we not only look at this from at the federal level, right, but that we're also electing people locally and in our state legislatures that are really going to represent the values that we're fighting for, right? There are so many state legislatures that continue to introduce legislation that would deny non-citizens access to basic healthcare benefits and needs. And so, you know, when we're talking about what needs to change and the things that we need to protect and the rights that we need to expand, it's everything from our very, very local elected officials to who sits in the Oval Office and is making those decisions with us and for us. And so, you know, my ask to everyone as someone who didn't have the right to vote in the last election, but now does for the first time, is that we take that so seriously. And it really is a responsibility to represent them.
That's a great note to end on. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Lorella Prieli, Hillary Clinton's Latino Outreach Director, and Miriam Young, Executive Director of the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. That's it for this week. What Would a Feminist Do? Is produced by Maggie Freeling. Katie Enders is the supervising producer. Valerie Lipinski is the head of multimedia. Our intro song is by Rook Day. If you like this podcast, please take a minute to rate us and leave a review on iTunes. It will help get the word out to others that What Would a Feminist Do is something that they should be listening to. I really appreciate it. I'm Jessica Valenti for The Guardian. I hope you'll join me again in 2 weeks for What Would a Feminist Do?